look at 696 again, that way.
What is this way in front of me?
It shouldn't be in front of me.
Leave it alone.
Dick, you were the one that wanted...
Yes, Mr. Finisher, Madam Chairman, and I'd like to have him tell us now what his position is on 696.
Mr. Finn?
Don't hear those words. Those are my words.
Madam Chairman, I'll pass out copies of the CSD grievance procedure.
Take that toys out. Yeah, go play with your paper. Here.
Go ahead. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Joe Finn with the Children's Services Division. Mr. Lowey is here, and I think could give me some assist in
171 covers this
explaining how we can arrive at a neat compromise on this bill.
Is this situation covered under 171?
No, because this is a new bill. I mean, 171 only deals with existing legislation and conflicts that have arisen since the passage of the amendment.
Well, if we pass this, shouldn't we build it in, though?
Yes, they have it slightly built in, but I think there's a way that it could be changed, which might come to a compromise. I don't know, because I've just been, Mr. Thim just asked me about it. But I notice that, in Section 3, the, as I understand this bill, there's a preliminary hearing at the local level if there's a foster parent a grievance, if there's some problem. And then it goes centrally to Children's Services Division, and there is a subsequent hearing at the statewide level, and then under subsection 5 of Section 3, it's subject to review as any other agency final order in the Court of Appeals. The only thing I would look at procedurally in this Section 3 of this bill is it might, if I'm looking at it, my first reaction is how do I handle the record on review in the Court of Appeals? What have I got in my hands to show to the Court of Appeals, and what is the Court of Appeals looking at? I would suggest that the state-level hearing before Children's Services Division just be directly keyed into a contested case with all the applicable contested case rules, and then you know you've got a proper record. This one creates some ambiguities. It doesn't say what the notice of the state-level hearing shall include. Now, the 183.415 sets out almost a pleading that the agency must say, this is, you requested a hearing, this is what we base our action on, and you go in with some specific areas. It says, as a statement of authorities, the APA, if you do a contested case hearing, gives subpoena powers. It it's fairly well drawn as to how that case is, contested case, is conducted before the agency with two views in mind, protection and also a proper record for on review. I would only say that as Section 3 reads here, there's some ambiguities, and you'd probably give more protection at the state level. Now, I'm not talking about the local level, because obviously that's your preliminary thing that you may be able to work the problem out. But if you want the local level, or the state level one, subject to review by the Court of Appeals, it would seem if you just key Section 3 into a notice, hearing, and record in contested cases as provided in 183.415, you'd again have that, which I'm beginning to sound like a broken record on, uniformity, but you would also have when questions arise, applicable decisions, whether it's an OLCC or a, whether it's a liquor case or a real estate case, as to how that hearing should be conducted and what the errors are. Now, this was just mentioned to me to Mr. Thim, by Mr. Thim here, and I, as you know, I'm here on other things, but I think I could probably, given time, draft an amendment to Section 3 that would accomplish that purpose. Now, it would not take away what I gather is the committee's sense, and it seems to me salutary, the local level conference thing, and if you don't, if they don't like it, then they go to state level. But the state level should probably, being of a higher matter, should be probably be run similar to grievance before the real estate commissioner or anybody else.
Can you give us the amendment right now?
Well, if I could have 5 minutes, Senator, I probably could step out and do it.
5 minutes.
Madam Chairman, could I request your attention to two other amendments that I would suggest? One is on page 2 of the bill, line 23. Rather than by the supervisor of the local office, I would suggest by the Children's Services Division Regional Director. We have seven regional directors, and the foster parent would be taking his grievance directly to the regional level. He would assign undoubtedly a district director to hear the grievance at that level.
All right.
The other thing that I would I'm concerned about is on page 3 of the bill, section 5, and I would suggest here that
we have amended that.
You have amended that?
Yes.
That's line 31.
I see. I'm not familiar with the amendment.
The amendment, it cases of child abuse.
My wife wants me to go home to a point here is that this section is superfluous in that you already cover it under Senate Bill 10, which you considered earlier. When you provide in Senate Bill 10 that if any plan the CSD is supervising is subsequently revised, the division shall notify the court of the revisions and the reasons therefore.
Well,
the concern that we have is that, and I just checked this out, and it's not confirmed, but as soon as you get into the business of the court, having a role in determining planning, you get close to this federal money issue again.
Well, the purpose of this is, of course, to notify the foster parent.
Right.
And it has been amended. If you and Mr. Lowey would work on those amendments, why, we'd be happy to consider them. Let's turn to Senate Bill 668. Senator Keith Burns.
Are we on what, 668?
Right.
See, Madam Chairman, there were presented to the committee amendments by, in the testimony of Mr. Nostall on behalf of the Oregon State Home Builders Association. And the proponent of this bill, when he presented these, agreed to the first eight amendments. And they're numbered by paragraphs in Mr. Nostall's testimony. And then I talked to Mr. Nostall this afternoon. And on item 9,
is this in the packet?
Yeah. On item 9, there's disagreement on it, and we resolved this in this way. The last proposal was for a 10-year warranty, and it's been agreed by Mr. Nostall and in conversation with me that we put in a 5-year warranty. And that with respect to subsequent purchasers, it would only be to the second subsequent purchaser who purchased it within 1 year of the original sale. And then on item 10, with respect to the requirement that the purchaser report the defect, the bill contains a phrase of reasonable time. We've agreed that, and Mr. Nostall proposed 20 days, we've agreed to 90 days. And then on the the bill has now written provides that if the purchaser prevails in court, that he would be allowed a reasonable attorney fees in addition to costs, and we've agreed to say that the prevailing party shall be allowed reasonable attorney fees. And so that takes care of all the amendments suggested by Mr. Nostal, and I would move the adoption of the amendments and have the bill engrossed and bring it back to the committee after that, because they are rather numerous.
You're moving the adoption of Mr. Nostal's amendments as amended by yourself today.
Right, right. And I'll write those out and give them to John.
Right.
Madam Chairman, I was looking for something when I first started, Keith. What happens to a guy, to a linoleum dealer or a rug dealer? What have we done to him?
Well, this is between the original seller. Well, no, it's other good. Let me get to it.
I see a difference between the linoleum or rug dealer and the problems of a construction contractor.
Well, I don't know what section that is.
It's not in the bill itself. I think the question.
Well, then
in determining whether or not rug or linoleum is going to be fall under this bill, it depends on whether or not that's determined to be realty rather than a real property rather than personal property. Under the statute now, personal property already is subject to these implied warranties.
Well, it's really linoleum is realty.
Linoleum and probably a carpet that is a what do you call it?
So in that case, if that is the case, then the statute would apply to linoleum and carpeting, wall-to-wall carpeting.
Madam Chairman, could I have a dialogue with Keith for a minute? I'm all for making contractors give good merchandise, but when you think about the special problems of in modern-day construction, not sure my house probably, but the way they do it, they have a slab and they put some particle board down and they glue the carpet on or they glue the linoleum on or whatever, and that's part of the building. I think it has to stay as part of the building. Now that type of stuff can be abused so it isn't worth a nickel in 6 months, and it wouldn't take 6 months to figure out how to do it either. It looks like you're putting some people in a very precarious situation, so I don't want to damage them. Legislation here, but I do think that we got to be sure we don't crucify somebody. Now, there may be other examples besides rugs and linoleum, but those things come to my mind because they...
Well, let me look here. Just a second.
Well, if I understand your amendment, you're given a 5-year hunting season on a new house.
It's short enough on the house.
It's too long. If you had this, I could go get my house
repainted. Well, maybe some of the paint jobs ought to be made for you.
Well, they're not done in a workmanlike manner, John. That's what it's.
I don't know how.
And they have no warranty now. The only time they have a warranty now, if it's an insured loan by a government agency that requires a 1-year warranty. That's the only warranty a person has that.
Well, I'd say, Keith, that on the painting that was done around the east on my house, it was done as workmanlike and as well.
You sound like Gordon, the landlord said it.
Well, I was all right on that one. I'm sure it was done as well as any paint job ever done anywhere, and it's still chipping off because of the terribly exposed hill
right
that I live on.
John, let me suggest this. We may. I'm not moving the bill out. I'm moving the amendments. Let's get it back here, and there's a couple of other problems in the bill that I'm not raising today, but I want to get this engrossed and bring it back.
Well, would it be possible for you to be sure?
I'll tell you what.
You recognize these special problems.
I'll tell you, there's some carpeting. Well, there. A problem that arises is, for instance, a builder tells a subcontractor he wants this kind of a job done, and it's an inferior job. And he pays the contractor, the subcontractor, accordingly. Well, he shouldn't be able to turn around, the contractor shouldn't, against the subcontractor who performed the job according to what the contractor said, and then the contractor covers it up with carpeting or something. Now, there's some problems like that in here, but
yeah,
there, Mr. Skoy is not here, and there's some others that want to talk about it. But I'd like to get, these are fundamental amendments here. With these, we've got most of the disagreements out of the picture. I'd like to have the bill engross these amendments in it, and then bring it back to committee.
Well, do you have no suggestion how to take care of rugs and car and linoleum before you re-engross it?
Well,
right now, these people are really at a terrible disadvantage, as I see it.
Well, they can certainly defend by showing that the other party, the one that damaged it, that the stuff was of quality, and it was done in the working like manner, and so it's just the person who purchased the house that did it. Same way with the car, they can show that with the car, you get a warranty, and you can go in and try to enforce the warranty, and they show that you misused the car. And that's what caused the harm to the car. It's no different than any other warranty.
Keith, have you talked with anybody regarding bonding capacity? As you know, most contractors, and almost all contractors, are bonded. Most of the time, subcontractor will not be allowed on the job unless he is bonded. My question is, with this kind of a warranty thing facing them, what is the bonding company going to do when they're exposed to this kind of a warranty that you're suggesting for 5 years? I would guess that they're going to be very hesitant to bond a subcontractor for that kind of exposure. If you don't bond it, then you're involved in the whole question of the contractor-subcontractor relationship with respect to securing the original job.
Well, Senator Smith, I can't address myself to that problem specifically, but just let me point out that nationally, the Home Builders Association, in this morning's paper, I think it was, proposed where they're going to come up with a 10-year warranty on homes. This is not something that's just starting in the Oregon legislature. It's being discussed nationally. It's done in England, and it's got to come. Now, we have to overcome certain problems to bring it about, and we can discuss that when we get the bill back. But I'd like to have these amendments in here, so I got something that we don't have the whole world against, just we've limited the opposition statistics. I've got too many against it right here.
Is it the committee's wish to have the bill engrossed with Mr. Nossal's amendments as amended by Senator Burns? Is there objection? It's ordered, then the bill be engrossed.
Thank you.
Are we ready on 696?
I am. This is what I would propose to read. I haven't had a chance to have copies for the rest of the day to look at. But to delete the present section 3 in 696, that's on page 3 of the printed bill at line 10. Delete section 3 and substitute a new section 3, which would read, any foster parent who is aggrieved by the finding of the person conducting the hearing under Section 2 of this Act may request and shall be provided notice and hearing by the Children's Services Division pursuant to ORS 183.415 through 183.470 if the request for hearing is made within 10 days after the conclusion of the hearing under Section 2 of this Act or receipt of the findings. Request for hearing, whichever is later. Request for hearing shall stay agency action. The order entered pursuant to ORS 183.470 shall be subject to review as provided in ORS 183.480.
Discussion of the amendments.
There's one question. Request for hearing shall stay agency action. Now, we could find situations, as an example, where you would have a teenager who would object to staying in the foster home. The foster parents feel that the agency is taking the side of the teenager, and they want the youngster to stay, but the teenager's saying, either I get out or I'm going to run away. But the foster parent's insisting that the youngster stay there. So we're at loggerheads. Now, in a situation like that, we may be right now in a position of having to take the teenager, move the youngster, even temporarily, to a second foster home until the situation is cooled. And when you can work out the difference, and then you can move the youngster back. So I'm concerned about that type of situation.
How often does that occur?
I don't know.
You're concerned about 311. They have.
Is there a motion on
the amendment?
The amendments have been moved as supplied by Mr. Lowy. Is there objection to the adoption of the amendments by Mr. Lowy? So ordered.
I move the bill be engrossed.
There's a question. Well, I have no objection. Go ahead.
Well, engrossed as the previous amendments about the, and including Mr. Lowy's amendments.
The previous amendments, Mr. Lowy.
Before Mr. Lowy leaves.
Oh, excuse me, he has another one.
I had a question. Al, 171 addresses itself to foster homes.
Yes, Senator.
This addresses itself to foster parents.
171 addresses itself to foster homes and to daycare centers and the certification thereof. This addresses itself to a grievance procedure with the child in the foster home, not the certification of the foster home as a specific.
All right. Well, no, this...
There is no place...
No, okay, you're right. Okay, you're right. Okay.
Mr. Tim has other amendments.
Mr. Chairman, my only suggestion is in Section 5 that this language be considered, that the Children's Services Division shall notify and provide reasons to the court whenever it plans to remove a child from a certified foster home to surrender custody to the natural parents. That brings it into conformity with the section that you passed on in Senate Bill 10. And it gets away from, I think, an implicit conflict without a court hearing. And implicit in that is that the court could agree or not agree with the division's plan to remove a youngster from the foster home and place him with the natural parents. And as soon as you get into that kind of a bag, you have the federal funding conflict appearing again. But I do suggest that this amendment would be consistent with Senate Bill 10.
All right, Senator Hoyt includes that amendment in within his amendment. Is there objection? You're going to ask to have the bill engrossed?
Yes,
and return. Is there objection to the amendments and engrossing the bill and returning it? So ordered. Senate Bill 171.
Need of us said other than allowing it.
You want to grab a seat and I'll come down there and we'll...
Do you know what the status quo are? Are they looking for just a nimble or are they going to
have a hell of a markup for
us? Oh, I see.
Madam Chairman, Senator Smith and Senator Ivers and I were appointed as a subcommittee, and I was the chairman on it. And Senator Ivers wasn't at our subcommittee meeting today over an election. And, Senator Smith and I decided that we'd like to have you abolish the subcommittee and have this committee work on this bill as a committee as a whole.
Right, so are
we. Senator Burns decided that, and I agree with him.
Bill 171.
Turned down as a one paragraph bill, and it's now turned into a 58-page bill.
Wow. What this does is to bring several
order into chaos.
No. Agencies that under the Administrative Procedures Act and also sets up a procedure for the publication and adoption of rules and providing people an opportunity to request hearings and so forth. Now, we had correspondence from Mr. Frohmeyer and Mr. Lowy is written back to him and back and forth, and they've generally worked out their differences. In your packet, you have a section-by-section analysis of the proposed amendments. This was prepared by Mr. Lowy. Also in the same packet, you have letters from the Secretary of State's office, the Supreme Court, Insurance Commissioner, the Public Welfare Division, the State Engineer, the Department of Human Resources, Department of, and they all think this is, and the Board of Pharmacy, and they all agree with the proposed amendments. And Mr. Kalinowski was here testifying, and he objected to some things here. He's here now, and we've taken some of his objections into consideration and changed some things. Now, if we go to, there's a couple of amendments that, we have to make some amendments to the amendments first, a couple of places. And the first amendment to the amendments is line 12 on page 2 of the bill. We have paragraph, paren small d, and that should be changed to subsection Arabic 3 in paren, because it's referring to the subsection 3 which appears at page 3 at line 4. That should be changed. And the on line 15, page 2, the word otherwise, nobody can figure out why it's there. And so we, that should be amended out. Now, then on line 19 and line 20, we have five persons and five members. There's been a discussion as to how many people should request a hearing. Some said as high as 25. Most people thought five was too few, and so we kind of compromised that at 10. And so I would propose that as an amendment to the amendment. Now, oh, and then over on line 9, page 3, at the end of that line, the words by rule should be deleted. I think that's all we're going to do.
There was Frohnmeyer, Professor Frohnmeyer pointed out a couple of typographical errors, which I agreed on. The letter and proposed amendments are in your packet. On page 2, line 11, after the first 2, insert an N. That should be in there.
Wait a minute.
Did we
refer to in between the ORS citation?
Yes. And on, let's see that. Yeah. That was the only one there. Also, Senator, you didn't mention this, which called to my attention, and I have in my proposed amendment asked that an emergency be declared and take effect July 1. The reason for this being that last session when we amended the Administrative Procedure Act, we didn't have an emergency bill, so it all of a sudden came up with September 10, 1971, which was kind of an odd date. If we have an effective July 1 date that we can go on, we can implement it and get it underway.
Well, we could say that about all legislation.
Yes,
you're going
if you
to
have, I am only proposing it because it was proposed to me.
Well,
in some
unless
of these,
there's a valid reason.
Well, there is another valid reason, Senator, that might be applicable. In 71, after the amendment, it's the question, of course, that's not applicable either because we already have a decision on it. What about those contested cases that were pending in the circuit court at the time of the
Well,
of the effective date?
I assume he's taking care of that in here.
No, there's no savings clause. There probably aren't any, as a matter of fact. If you don't want the emergency, we don't care. I merely say that I propose it as a... The best reason I can give for it is July 1 is a very nice date. Okay, then we don't need the emergency clause. I think, Senator Burns, your deletion of that by rule, Professor Frohnmeyer's suggestion was also that on page 3, line 11, to give them rulemaking that they, when they charge fees for the mailing list, they should do that by rule. And he suggested that after the first and, delete the balance of the line and insert by rule establish and charge fees necessary to defray the cost, and then line 12 would remain the same of mailings and maintenance.
I know. Okay. Is that my copy?
Did we discuss about going from Superior Court to Court of Appeals before? Have we disposed of that?
No, this one goes to the court.
Yeah, but ordinarily in the district of that, it goes to the Superior Court.
No.
That was new language here. Read the last paragraph of the summary.
Committee may be interested in Mr. Frohnmeyer's and my comments on the change in the effective date. Professor Frohnmeyer points out that, let's see if I can get to that. Yes, on page 3, line 17, the present legislation says no rule adopted after September 9, 1971, and that is September 9 is deleted and the effective date of this 1973 act is inserted. Well, I got confused about this, so I called the legislative, because I get confused about effective dates every now and then, so I called legislative council and had quite a talk with Jane about it, and we couldn't come up to too much of a conclusion as to what way to draft this. Now, Professor Frohnmeyer suggests that this would have the effect of curing any defect in a rule. I will read his comment. If I can find it.
It's on the third page, item seven.
Does the change in effective date, page 3, line 17 and 18, possibly or imply or mean that all rules defectively promulgated between 1971 and 73 are now deemed valid? Maybe such a curative provision would be a good idea. Jane Gearhart and I couldn't come to a conclusion whether it did or not. My only comment on this is, if it is a curative provision, Jane and I kind of felt maybe it was. I don't know that I can approve, I want to approve of it, I don't really care, but legislatively curing, sometimes, frankly, an agency needs to be batted down to learn to follow the procedures, battled down in court to learn to follow the procedures. I have no comment on it. It may have that effect. I don't think it's going to hurt anything.
And well, Hoyt, did you have a question?
Well, I was looking at reading the summary of the engrossed bill, and I find a listing of a number of agencies.
Yes, Senator, and I can give that to you. It's in your section-by-section analysis. Senator Burns and I have gone over it, or Senator Burns can run it down.
You want me to point out where those agencies appear?
No, I want to ask a general question.
Okay.
I thought that last session that we've just about blanketed everybody in. Now, why do we miss these, or why are they?
This arose, Senator, as we maintained a file from the effective date of the act when we would run across a conflict. The Bar Committee and our office attempted to go through the entire 7 gray volumes and pick out every places where there might be a conflict with the proposed amendment and existing enabling legislation. We missed some, frankly.
In other words, these people in the last paragraph of summary were omitted inadvertently?
No. Those people in the last paragraph of the summary would have provisions in their enabling legislation which would be in conflict with provisions in the APA. To give you an example of that, the best example of that is welfare. Welfare is exempted for its contested case provisions from the provisions of the Administrative Procedure Act. Welfare is required under its enabling legislation to give a fair hearing in pursuance to the Administrative Procedure Act. There would also be agencies in which review of their contested cases, instead of going directly to the Court of Appeals, would go to the Circuit Court Fair Dismissal Appeals Board had a leftover provision that nothing will preclude a writ of review in the Circuit Court, and we are arguing tomorrow a case on that very question, in which a dismissal of a teacher by a school board was heard by the Fair Dismissals Appeal Board. Then that case went directly to the Court of Appeals in one hand, and also, because everybody wanted to be safe, went down to Marion County for a writ of review, and we had the same question being reviewed in the Court of Appeals and also being requested in the Circuit Court, making a two-way and rather expensive procedure. That type of things, these are flaws and inconsistencies. They are not bringing these agencies weren't exempt. It's just that they did not pick up until we got into working with it, where they'd overlooked in the conforming section.
Well, then, would you say that these are really not substantive changes?
I would definitely say they're merely housekeeping.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
That's what most of the bill is concerned
with. Does somebody want to move the amendments proposed by Senator Burns and the amendments proposed by Mr. Lowry, but not including the emergency clause?
I shall move.
Discussion of the amendments. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Kingsbury?
Aye.
Senator Hoyt?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chairman, I wonder if I misspoke myself. This matter of making retroactive approving a lot of things that maybe aren't right, that you brought up, that's on line 17 of page 3. I just wonder whether we really, maybe I...
Could I speak on that? I don't think it does that. I don't think we should do that. And I don't see why the interpretation is that this does that. It says no rule adopted after the effective date of this 1973 Act is valid unless adopted in substantial compliance with this section.
Yes.
It doesn't address itself to those rules that were adopted prior to that.
By implication, they wouldn't be any good either if they weren't right.
That's my interpretation. Now, apparently, Mr. Lowy and...
I don't know.
Why did you put it in then?
I didn't. That came out of... I did not put that in.
That was in the original Senate Bill 171 as drafted.
I don't know that that interpretation is there. In response to your comment, Senator Burns, I do think when you go to the other sections of the Act, there was in 71 a curative provision for anything prior to the new Act.
Well, that's deleted now.
Yeah, well, no.
Where is that?
Oh, I have to, let's see. That's in another, let's see.
In this bill, this engrossed out?
No, it isn't.
It's not in there, and it seems by the fact that we removed that, it would show our intent not to cure them.
I wouldn't have it.
All right.
Senator
Smith.
On page 2, lines 13 to 16, conceptually, I'd like to move an additional amendment providing for the, in the notice area, providing for the location of where copies might be available to people. Maybe like John did.
Right. Senator Smith has moved that. Page 2, line 13 and 4, conceptually, that the place be made known, or the provision be made that notice be given as the place where copies of the
rules. Already in there.
Where?
Wherever they don't publish it in its entirety, they have to state where the rules are available.
And I'll show you where, if I can just get myself down to it. This is... page 6, section 4, Canada. And also up above in section 3.
Have to identify the adopting agency?
Well, certainly when he publishes it.
I think
he does, as a matter of fact, but I guess he has to.
Senator Smith, are you talking about, say, a written rule prior to the adoption of the rule? I think prior to the hearing.
Well, that's within an agency. We don't advise agencies always to adopt a rule prior to the hearing because that makes it look like their head's already made up.
I'm sorry. I don't mean adopting the rule prior to the hearing, but come out with a proposed rule
proposed
that those people
rule.
Can...
Yes.
Interesting.
If an agency, if it has a proposed rule and it's notice of that it's going to hold a hearing on it, will put out the proposed rule. Under this provision, they will put it in that notice. It will go out on the mailing list to the people that have put themselves on the mailing list. But in all cases, an agency does not have a proposed rule.
All right, but doesn't the material on page 6 apply to rules that have already been adopted instead of proposed rules?
No, that includes proposed.
Let's see if I can get to that. Let's see, intended action.
in terms of substantive.
I think that's a pretty good bill.
Involved in the time, place, manner in which persons may present their views thereon. Now, let's see. You're saying, as I understand it, you may be right on the compilation. You're talking proposed rules. If they have
right.
a notice and they've
right.
got a proposed rule, you want them to require that.
Yeah.
I just don't want to require them to have a proposed rule every time they intend to adopt, amend, or repeal a rule, because that looks like they're not going to accept any input.
They do have a proposal, or they wouldn't be...
They may have a proposal, but the text of the rule may not be adopted, Senator.
The point right. is, though, that people, not knowing what the proposal may be, will not have any notice about
right.
whether
I'll
or not they want to oppose it or not. So
I'll tell you what we did. That we, on one bill we had, I guess it was a revenue, on local budget meetings. There they had they had copies of the budget available. Well, that didn't work because that's what they're getting together for, to adopt the budget, so that they don't have the budget. And so we're running in the same situation here, and there we used the word budget documents or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would
like
suggest we might do use some term such as that here.
Dick calls your attention to line 13 and 14 on page 2.
Well, that's what he's talking
about. That's what I'm talking about.
That's what he's talking about.
What's wrong with it? I thought that's what you wanted.
Well, there it says, the notice shall include a statement either the terms or substance of the intended action. And so this does essentially what, in the analogy I use, Bob, it gives them perhaps the most information they can at that time, because they're having a hearing I don't think we go much further than that. Because otherwise you're having them send out a rule they're going to adopt, when really they want to have a hearing to find out what kind of rule should be adopted.
Many times they do already have a rule proposed.
That's right.
Now, if they have a rule proposed, how in the hell can you determine whether you want to go to the hearing or not to oppose it?
I think this, the terms...
I don't want to compel them to have a rule adopted. But if they have a proposal, then it ought to be public information.
Well, it is definitely, let me
and
put it this way. If they're, I can say this by rule, and I don't have a copy, but by the model rules, which have been adopted by most of them, we give examples of notices of proposed action. And the agencies say, having adopted the rules, if they have a proposed rule, they will set out the proposed, they are to set out the proposed rule in their notice. If you look at the Secretary of State's bulletin, you'll see a lot of them have them. If, however, they do not have a proposed rule, they are to set out the terms and substance of the intended action. If they do some, I'm confident, if they just say, I know it's hard to read, it's difficult to read, but if they set out that terms and substance and it isn't a substantial setting out, that rule may be invalid, and they are constantly advised to that effect.
Okay,
now,
what about...
There's somebody else here that wants to... Oh, excuse me, have we finished?
Let me just suggest one thing, try it on you. Line 14, after the word involved, how about adding the words, or the proposed rule if prepared?
Right, exactly. I would have no objection.
Proposed rule in
the opinion, Madam Chairman.
Yes?
I would suggest instead of the proposed rule, the rule proposed to be adopted and then the rule if it has been prepared.
Well, if it's repealed, you won't prepare an amendment. If you want to get that specific, the proposed rule if prepared or any proposed amendments. Would that do it?
Does that satisfy you, Bob?
Yes.
Okay.
That's in the form of a motion for amendment. Is there any objection? So ordered. Sir, you're
Bill.
From Workman's Comp. And
yes, Madam Chairman. Thank you. I'm Bill Peterson, member of the legal staff of Workman's Comp. I
just
have
stay there. You may want to work
yes,
with them.
They may have reaction to the comments. I wish we may. if I could address myself just to a few questions. Incidentally, I have a more than average interest in the bill because I am a member of the Administrative Law Committee, and they have reviewed Mr. Lowy's suggested amendments, and I'm not authorized to speak for the committee. I'm sure their position is that these are appropriate amendments generally. The two things, or three, I wanted to question. On page 2, line 25, 24 and 5 really, it says postpone the date of its intended action no less than 10 or more than 40 days. We feel that the 40-day maximum limitation may in fact unduly burden an agency. If someone comes in and asks them to postpone action, they want to make another input, that agency might very well need some additional time. They may say, yes, he has brought up a good point. We want to get some additional input. We would like to see 40 days extended somewhat, like 90, 180, something like that.
Well, they've got up here on line 10, give notice of intended action not less than 20 days prior there. So you're really talking about 60 days by that time.
Yes, Senator, but I think that would really, this doesn't may not come about until after the request from the person who says, I want action postponed. And that won't occur until up to 15 days after the first notice. As I read this, upon request of an interested person received within 15 days after agency notice. So that part of that would be eaten up.
Could I ask Mr. Lowry a question?
Yeah.
Was this 40 days, is it in there because they feel that they can't, or need limitations, so they can't postpone it indefinitely, and then people lose interest in it, and they drag on and on, and then pretty soon they're back again, taking another shot at it.
That's what the 40 days was there. Maybe the 90 would be better. I did feel that there should be an end limitation on it.
Is 90 days make any difference?
I don't think so.
As 90 days make you happy, Bill?
Sure, it'd be fine. And we comprehend there should be some maximum on it, so it doesn't drag on.
I would move that.
Is there objection to the amendment? So ordered.
On page 3, I have a couple of technical questions. On line 2, it refers to the adoption of an identical rule under paragraphs A and B of subsection 1. I think probably that paragraphs A and B should be deleted so that it simply says under subsection 1, because you're talking about the agency's right to adopt a rule under ordinary rulemaking procedures, even though they have adopted an emergency rule, and subsection 1 as a total addresses itself to the ordinary rulemaking practice.
I'm so moved.
You're moving to delete A and B?
Paragraphs A and B
of.
I see. A and B of. Is there an objection to that amendment? So ordered.
It seems to be in line 6, or at least in the general reading of the first sentence on page 3, and reading from 4 through line 7, that something's wrong, and it may simply be that the word filing in line 6 should be filed.
That
sounds peculiar to me. I can't quite figure out what it's saying. It was really just a question when I was reading it here a moment ago.
I suppose that is the right file. The agency will have copies of those in the intended action given to the agency filed. And filed, it definitely should be. That's so moved, Madam Chair.
Objection. So ordered.
Now the other matter of substance that I wish to raise, Madam Chairman, on page 6, I suppose is the most direct place to address it. This amendment took and deleted subsection 3, if I read it correctly.
And then, subsection 3?
Well, on page 6,
yeah.
There's an italicized section being deleted. It broke that then into two pieces, but says substantially the same thing as to the compilation of rules and as to the Secretary of State's book. I don't think that in this area Mr. Lowy has made a substantive change, so I'm not complaining what his amendments have done. But one of the problems that I think has arisen a great deal with respect to the APA is the practice of the Secretary of State to publish a very limited 25 words or less statement of agency action, which is really authorized under this language that says, contains a notice stating the general subject matter of the omitted rule. What it says is if a rule is too cumbersome, he can simply state its subject matter. And quite frankly, my view, and I know there's been much discussion off and on in the Administrative Law Committee, is that this has resulted in a publication that's not much more meaningful than a legislative calendar. when you want to know what a bill's about. I at one point talked to Mr. Smith about this, Hugh Smith, who was one of the prime draftsmen and spearhead of the APA back when he was on Ministry of Law Committee. This was a point he raised with me when I had asked him to review some of this proposal.
You have suggested language.
The language that he suggested was, Mr. Lowry may have a comment on this, would be substitute, for example, in line 8, deleting the words stating the general subject matter and substituting therefore, setting forth a digest of all significant provisions of the admitted rule. I think the direction would be to attempt to get something more parallel to what is now a bill summary that highlights the substantive
provisions.
Why
can't you say that? Rather than all digest of all significant sections, why can't you say a summary?
Well, I think the key thing, Senator Smith, is that it suggests that the summary not just state this is the subject matter, this is a bill on child on welfare, but that it has these substantive effects. I think you have to ask that all the substantive or all of the substantial questions be highlighted. And I'm not sure of what the best language would be. This language was suggested to me. I'm raising the problem more than anything else.
Chairman, in a letter, all of the new language in this bill has been identified, this letter from Mr. Lowry. Now, you could get into endless pages depending upon the intention of what you're trying to do. And there ought to be a way to suggest a summary of the intended proposal rather than a comprehensive identity of every section.
May I make a point on this, a practical point? I have dealt with the Secretary of State's bulletin in this problem for 2 solid years, and I have tried. Problems will arise. Secretary of State says, we haven't got that much place and money to put into that money, time, with one personnel down there running out this administrative bulletin. Is it our responsibility to do it, to write this summary? I would say certainly not. It's the agency's responsibility to write the summary. The agency then, in excess of caution, will of course provide the Secretary of State with a 3-page summary to cover every single identifiable item. I would suggest, we've lived with this problem. I would suggest much more, it's much greater problem than could be taken up at this moment, that the Bar Committee and I and the Secretary of State's office get together and find out if something can be done to improve the Secretary of State's bulletin. That has not been possible. That is specifically why, when these amendments came up, it was my proposal to create this mailing list. This at least puts persons directly affected by agencies on absolute notice that they will take the one step themselves to write to the agency that supervises them, send me the stuff that you're putting out. They do not then have to search through the Secretary of State's bulletin. They have the notices that affect them immediately in their hand in direct mail.
Senator Keith Burns.
I don't know how many of you have read this bulletin the Secretary of State puts out, but it's just about as much fun reading as run through the classified ads and the Sunday Oregonian from one end to the other. But I do think it does this. And you go through there, you can spot something that's of interest to you that you may have some concern, and then all you got to do is write the agency. I think it's doing that, and I don't think it's anything is escaping anybody that has a direct interest or a particular interest in a certain subject matter. I don't think it's escaping them by the way they're doing it now. This is not to suggest they couldn't do it better. It's kind of like a grade school kid cranking out a newspaper on a mimeograph machine. You know, it's just really pretty gruesome. But I do think it's alerting the people to changes in the subject matter they have a direct interest in. And then it's the burden theirs to write to the agency and get the fuller information. I concur with what Mr. Lowry says. I think that we ought to leave this alone here now. The Secretary of State can certainly use some help in adding a little bit to his bulletin. I think even the present manpower might be dressed up and done a little bit better to be easier to read. But I don't think anybody's missed it.
All right.
I
don't know. I just really think that I think there ought to be a method to provide a summary that does give not the layman an opportunity to see what's happening. I don't think that's been done.
Have you read this?
Yes, I've read it.
Well,
it's just like a bill digest.
Well, I know.
It's a one sentence relating to Ways and Means or related to Children's Services, and that's all it says.
Well,
relating to Children's Services, a proposed rule. And I suggest that you don't know.
I found it to be a little bit broader than that, Bob, in my experience.
Madam, maybe it varies from issue to issue.
Bob, do you want John to prepare some language to...
I think, you know, we just gave him 50 more positions for audit purposes. I think this is as important as 50 positions for audit. I think this is, we can give him another guy, if he has to have it, to provide this. This is the operation of government. This is government by fiat. And we better let people know what the hell's happening. I think it's the most important thing we can do.
I think if you say...
All right, Senator Smith has moved conceptually that line 8 on page 6 be amended so that there is some summary of the matter to be considered, and for Mr. DeWinter to draw such an amendment. Is there discussion of the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? So ordered.
Line 26 is no, John.
Have you got more, Bill?
No, I do not. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, thanks. Suggestions are good, I think.
Yeah.
Picked up some stuff we did.
What action does the committee wish on the bill?
Well, I'm ready to move it out as amended. I don't know whether you want to wait and see this amendment or not.
Well, I'd like Mr. Lowdy to help work on this question of summary. I don't want a book on everyone.
I'm trying to avoid books. I think, Senator, I think your motion was conceptual. I think more of yours is of more interest to you in page 6, instead of on page 6 where you were talking about that concept. That's the compilation and publication of the adopted rules.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the public is far more interested in the area on page 2 at lines 13 through 16. Once it's adopted, you get the rule as it is. What you really want to know, what you really want to do is have them put out something gives an idea. I wonder if, however, Mr. Peterson's language, the language you're talking about, I would only throw this as a suggestion to the committee, and this was pretty much Mr. Smith's language to me, and I have avoided it because we would might end up with Secretary of State's bulletin problem, and I didn't want to get into that.
Mr. Lyon, if you will work with Mr. DeWinter on the problem,
Do you want to leave it set the way it is now? And
whatever the committee's wish is.
Move it out of
DuPass. It's been moved out, DuPass, as amended, subject to Senator Smith's approval of the amendment as prepared by Mr. Lowry and Mr. DeWinter. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Keith Burns.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
I vote aye.
Now, I'd like a motion to have Senator Halleck carry the bill.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, we passed this afternoon Senate Bill 713, and it's been suggested that we left out the word hospital in that bill.
All right, we'll have to have a motion to reconsider.
I move we reconsider Bill 7
Bill
713.
I know.
Do you know about it?
Yeah,
I don't know how we're looking.
It's been moved that we reconsider 713, which we passed out at 1 o'clock. It said no physician, and... The suggestion is to add or hospital.
You might as well be married the way you're taking orders around here.
On the motion to reconsider, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator John Brin.
Aye.
Senator Keith Brin.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
Aye.
Senator Smith.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Senator Hoyt.
I take orders in my office over there. They're going to run me at home. I got $3
Nobody is the office report. I'm more than ready to add to the bill or hospital after no physician on whatever line it is.
I have no objection.
And I guess the word A was added before spouse. I don't know.
The clerk called roll on the amendment. John Grant?
Aye.
Keith Grant?
Aye.
Senator White?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
I've got a committee meeting starting in 45 minutes, Madam Chairman. I've got some questions.
Aye.
I'm going to try to match it.
Senator White moves the bill out and do pass as amended. Clerk called roll.
Senator John
Grant?
Aye.
Senator Keith?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye. Keith, you did a good job on this. I'm real pleased. I'm afraid we're going to
I did very little work. The work was done by...
I know, but we could have...